everybody. Welcome back to the official start of Season 2 of the Role Player Podcast, presented to you by the good people over at Switch Cultures and EuroHoops.net. You can still check us out on Spotify, Apple Music, or anywhere you get your podcasts. Also, follow along on all social media platforms, YouTube, IG, TikTok, and Twitter with the handle at Role Player Media, and on Switch Cultures' YouTube page. I am Jordan Taylor. Season 2 used to be 11-year, now 12-year pro, still rocking. I'm not sure how. Legs still holding up. EuroLeague vet rolling with the multi-talented Stanford gentleman, retired 11-year pro and Swiss Culture's co-founder, the one and only Anthony Goods, and the newlywed as well, man. Big shout-out to you, my guy. Congratulations. And, you know, a lot of changes over there at your office.
Nah, man, a lot of changes with you, man. You've been selling me this dream that you was going to retire. You're going to be a full-time media guy, cross over to the other side. And here you are, same place. New mic, though. So you got all your money last year. You
know, no, this mic is compliments to Evan Turner over there at the New Amendment Productions, man. So shout out them. You know, I picked up another podcast, picked up another job. I'm still waiting on some of my money from last year, but... I'm loyal, man. To the soil. Hey, man, but look, we gonna kick it off. Your hairline looking all right too. It's a little rounded off. I wasn't gonna say nothing. My joint.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, you looking fresh as always, but yeah, you know how it goes.
Straight from Manila. Hey, there's Africans literally everywhere. I found a African barbershop in Manila during the World Cup. So
Africans low key like Asians. They really like the new Chinese. It's just not spoken enough. It's not spoken about enough, man. But look, man, we got a real special guest with us this week. We had the second round pick, 56 overall in the 2012 draft to the Toronto Raptors. Spent a lot of time overseas as well. 5-time Croatian League champion, a 3-time Croatian Cup winner, a Lithuanian League All-Star back in 2012. Won a couple of bronze medals at U19 and U18 champion world and European championships respectively, representing Croatia. Got the one and only Mr. Tomislav Zubčić. What's going on, man? You good?
What's up, JT?
AKA Zuba, man. We glad to have you with us, man. And know it's gonna be a good show. I don't remember the last time we did a true European. It's been a minute, ain't it?
Yeah.
It has. For me, it's first time.
First time doing a podcast?
Yeah, nah, it's been.
Yes. All right. First
don't
time
be nervous,
podcast.
Man. Go ahead, relax, enjoy yourself. We're gonna have some fun with it, man. We do a couple segments, so we're gonna jump into the first one. It's called All Around the World, and as you can guess, it just kind of speaks on world basketball topics. So first off, just for the Switch Cultures fans or Role Player Media listeners, whoever it is, for those that don't know, you did grow up in the Balkans in Croatia. For those that don't know, rich basketball history there, a lot of basketball pride coming out of that region. So just break down, give us your background, what it's like growing up in the Balkans as a hooper.
Well, definitely started my career in Balkans, played for mostly 8 years over there, spent a lot of time with Balkan coaches. I mean, I don't know if a lot of people know how the Balkan coaches are, but they are crazy. They're crazy about practice. They're crazy about everything. So it wasn't easy. I had a lot of guys growing up together, like my age, didn't make it. So it was tough, but I'm lucky to be still alive. I'm 17 years pro and, you know, still moving. And I think I got still a few years in me. So it's been a fun so far.
Yo, do you think the Balkan coaches, and generally speaking from what you've heard or what you've experienced, do you think that they've kind of calmed down as opposed to, let's say, like 15 years ago? Because I used to just hear all the time about, you know, coaches from the Balkan area, how they make you run and just do kind of all these crazy practices and trainings. But now, obviously, with load management creeping on over to Europe and stuff like that, it seems like I'm starting to hear those whispers a lot less.
Well, definitely, they calm a little bit from before. I knew that one of the coaches I've been working with, it was Velimir Perasovic, and he was known for the one of the craziest guy ever considering the practices. So I think they calmed down. I think a lot of NBA influence is on them. A lot of new mentality involved in the game, the game developed differently. So I think they're a little bit softer, but still that Balkan, you know, spirit coming out of them during the games, but especially during the loss and everything. So I think they still have them, but it's rarely going out.
Yeah, when was the first time you saw a coach put hands on a player?
when I didn't see that. I had that growing up all the time. I had the coaches hitting us, throwing chairs, throwing balls at us, throwing, you know, the sticks, whatever they find on the court, they'll just throw at us. So it's nothing unusual.
That's funny, because I feel like for Americans, every time, you know, there's like a clip of something like that goes out, you know, American media and even the players, man, they're always surprised, because you go to jail for stuff like that out here. But
yeah, definitely. But here in Europe, that's normal. Balkan coaches, that's really normal. They slap you, they hit you, they'll curse you. I mean, cursing here is the, like, good morning. So
what? What drives the basketball passion? What drives the basketball passion in the Balkans? Like in the States, a lot of it is driven by, you know, you see people who look like you pretty much make a better life for you in the NBA, and I think that has a lot of like influence on culture in America, on basketball culture in America. So what drives that passion? What makes the coaches like that? Why is it like that?
I mean, I'm not sure why they're like that. I think a lot of temperament are involved in these countries, because they're really like a passion to the game. They really want to win. They really want to make everything perfect, everything how they want it. I think that how they want to control everything, and they cannot control 12 people, especially not 5 on the court or in all, every single moment, I think that get them mad and angry, so they cannot, like, they can control themselves.
Where does that desire for control come from, though? You know what I'm saying? Like, what is it? Does it have to do with, you know, the way you grow up in former Yugoslavia? Is it like a like environmental influence, or what do you think that like desire comes from to control?
I believe because of Yugoslavia, you know, people was, you know, during the war, you know, after the war, trying to prove who is better. So all these countries, you know, Serbia, Croatia, Slovenia, Bosnia, they all had the individuals who are really good. But, you know, putting the team together, they needed something extra. And I think the coaches pick up from that, like they try to push players to through the limits. And I think that something what is coming from the desire to, you know, to be crazy on the court.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, I was talking to a Serbian friend, and he said that you know, and I was asking like, man, why are guys from this area so good, yet you have countries with all kind of resources like a Germany and, you know, even France, you know, they have so many resources, and I think, you know, per capita, they're not producing the same amount of talent. And my guy told me, he was like, they don't have adversity. He's like, we have wars, you know, people are poor here and things like that. And I think that also kind of mirrors, at least, you know, back in the day before the training era boom, that also kind of mirrored how it was like in the States, where a lot of the prominent athletes were coming from, lower class communities.
For sure, you know, here in Balkan countries, it was like, you don't have nothing to lose. Like, you're poor already, so you might even do something about your life. And, you know, when you're over there and somebody's pushing you through the limits, like, that's your only option. So I think that's something what they're really about.
Do y'all think, so it sounds like some of the same triggers that used to be or still are probably in some instances in the States, right? Like just economic, socioeconomic environment, whatever it may be. Do y'all think that kind of that shift in the state? I mean, Bobby Knight, that's what the U.S. used to be known for, right? Crazy coaches, too. So do you think that shift, I guess, in mentality, for lack of a better term, is going to hinder the U.S. in basketball? Do you think it has anything to do with the world catching up? So it's quote unquote catching up in basketball, too?
I mean, you can see, like, most of European players are playing in the NBA. And they're not just the guys who sit on the bench. They're role players. They're big-time players. They're all-star players. So I think the talent from Balkan is kind of a little bit coming out on the surface. Like, you can see, like, the school what we have and the passion we have towards basketball, because, like I said, there is only one option. Then you have to be successful. You have to do something about your life. And I think these guys who are right now in all-star teams, like Doncic, Jokic, these guys are really talented. And now they bring different dimension of the basketball, and it's not something people are used to it. And because of that, they're doing good stuff. Mm-hmm.
And you left out quite a few, too. Bogdan Bogdanovic. A bunch of them.
There was a bunch of them, yeah. Bojan Bogdanovic. There's a bunch of Croatian kids, Šarić. Mm-hmm. You have all the kids. Jović, new guy from Serbia. He's a hell of a player. Like, you have these guys, but nobody's like Doncic and Jokic. Like, you don't have this... more of these guys individually amazed by NBA and amazed by the world, what they can do in NBA.
I'm not gonna lie. It's like, as a player and American pride, like, I'm always going to say the U.S. is the best basketball country, but the only country as a, like, when we go to play, like, Red Star or, you know, Cedevita or whatever it is, even when Cedevita might not be good or whatever, like, those are the only place, because you know them dudes are not going to back down from shit ever. Like, ever.
Yeah. That's the thing. They cannot back down because they don't have option to back down. Mm-hmm. You can see even Partizan, you know, playing tonight the game against Fuenlabrada. Like, you can see the fans. You can see the support. You can see Red Star every time they're playing EuroLeague games. It's desire. That's a love for the game, and just like, you cannot take them.
Yeah. Now, I was talking. I saw a tweet about it, and I was talking to some friends at when I was at the World Cup. We were talking about if former Yugoslavia was still together, you know, the team that they could put, you know, in the World Cup or in the Olympics, and you're thinking of like Doncic and Nikola Vucevic and Bogey, Bojan, Nikola Jokic, you know, Mirotic. I mean, the list goes on. Hezonja, all these guys. You know, where do you guys think a Yugoslavian team in 2023 right now, you know, stacks up in regards to the world?
Look, you putting from four or five countries, you put in the best individuals who play in the NBA and who are on top of the league. Like, they're top of the players over there individually. Like, I think, like, if they put ego on the side, I think that team with all bunch of these guys, you know, putting them together, can do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but where would you rank them?
I don't believe they would be, you know, they would beat USA in the best possible roster, but I think they would be close.
Hmm. Nah, you wild, and we running y'all out the gym. Don't get it twisted. No, it would be a hell of a lineup, and I think you would even add, like, maybe some lesser known names, like my guy from who's, and I always blank, my mind is going so good. Help me out, buddy. That was D'ing up like he was against Shea. Yeah.
Oh, Alexa, like, Alexa. You got Alexa, Micic,
yeah, you
Musa.
Gotta add those guys, cause
you got Nurkic. You're forgetting Nurkic.
Forgetting Nurkic. Like, yeah, and I'm sure.
You got a bunch of guys. You got Musa in Real Madrid. You got Hezonja. You got a bunch of guys who can actually play.
Yeah, so that would be interesting. That would be an interesting matchup. I'd like to see it rather in a World Cup, rather than in a World Cup setting. I'd rather see that in like a best of seven setting. Yeah,
best of seven. Yeah, I was about to say that. Yeah. That'd be a seven game series.
You get to see the matchup changes. You get to, rather than just one game, and that's too much talent to just have one game.
Yeah, one game cannot show everything. You have to.
Who would you pick to coach the Yugoslavian team?
Oh, that's a tough one. There's a lot of good coaches, but I don't. I mean, these guys don't need the coach. Like, why need the coach? They don't have to play ball. It's nothing new for them. You cannot draw any new set. Just let them play.
Yeah. What is it with? I feel like every Serbian teammate or Croatian, whatever Montenegrin teammate I have, is always like some of the coolest people that you meet. Like they're laid back, they will joke, like they joke, and as soon as they become a coach or something like that, they just the crazy comes out.
That's totally different setup. Like they can be the best possible teammates the whole career, and they flip that switch. Now, like if they've been like we had this the coach I've been telling before, Velimir Perasovic. So he was known for years that he's a shooter and he only played offense. He was hell of a 3-point shooter. As soon as he become a coach, he was nightmare for the defense. Like I was with him for 2 years when I was young. I'm gonna tell you, that 2 years, it was like probably like 10 in any other team. Mm. He was so crazy going with practices, with defensive drills, with all a bunch of stuff. And he never played defense in his basketball, in his professional player career. Never.
Yo, you mentioned Perasovic as some of the crazier practices. Be more, give us some more specifics on what a crazy practice looked like. Like what was crazy about it?
So I'll tell you. We had 1 year. We had preseason camp. So we started near capital city Zagreb in the mountains for 12 days. We go in the mountains. So 12 days, 3 practices a day. Morning, you got 8 a.m. You got running, so you run, I don't know, probably like 5-6 kilometers every morning. Then you go to lift weights after that, and after lifting weights, you go shoot. So morning practice is around 3 hours, 3 to 4. That's morning practice. Of course, after that, you go for lunch. You have a little bit break, and then you go again at 5. Usually because you're younger, you had to come earlier. So that's for you, it's like 4:15 p.m. And you will stay in the gym until probably like 8:30. That's optional. But this is the best part about that practice. For that 12 days, we didn't have days off. What he did, like, you know, there is a water break. He allowed water break for only for 10 to 15 seconds, so every, let's say, 30 minutes. But he would take out bench and chairs out of the gym, so you cannot sit during the water break. So you have to stand up, drink water, and go back on court. All days like that.
So y'all had a 9-to-5 hooping. That's crazy. Yep.
But the thing is, he would run with us. He would run with us in the morning, and he was ready. He was in the shape because that was his second year after he finished playing basketball. And then he was really ready. Like, he was in shape. So he would run with us, and who didn't finish before him, and he would sprint. Like, he would sprint every morning. Who doesn't finish before him, they have 1 more kilometers to go. That was crazy.
Looking back on that now, how did that shape your career? How did it shape your mindset as a basketball player?
Killed my few years in my professional career. That's a disaster. Like, good thing I was 18, 19, which was pretty, you know, kind of manageable for me. Like, I could recover easier than older guys, but still. I'm not gonna lie, it was a tough period. That tough 2 years.
That's OD. That's OD.
Look, it's not even that bad. I mean, it was bad that, but you know, we was getting used to it. So during the whole year, it was like crazy practices. You know, when you travel in Europe, it's always delayed flights. It's always long flights, and the thing with him was like, as soon as you land in different city, different country, so you land the day before the game. When you land, you go straight to the gym. You will not go to hotel to rest. You will go straight to the gym, practice 2 hours with tape, and then go to hotel. It was crazy 2 years.
That shit make me want to retire just off the rip, just listening to it, man. I'm not gonna lie. I couldn't do it.
Nah, even right now we had 13 straight practices and no days off. And I'm 34.
In Napoli, you've had 13 straight no days off.
13 straight practices.
Hold up. So back up real quick. Yeah. When you're practicing 8 hours a day back in Croatia in preseason. Yeah. Like, again, so you get to practice, let's say practice at 9, you get there 8:15. What does the practice look like? Let's say it's 9 to 1. What's the practice like schedule? Like, what are y'all doing?
Well, before it was different. Like, before we would do tactics, especially preseason, but when it's regular day practice, like you would just run the suicides, you'd run the 2-on-2+2 game. So you would be running 3-man wheel, you would be running 4-on-4, 5-on-5 for 3 hours.
God damn.
Yo, I used to hate those practices that would kind of do the build up. Like, you do the 1-on-1 full court, man. And you do 2-on-2. And then, like, 3-on-3 all the way until you get to 5-on-5. Because by the time you get to 5s, which is really what you want to do, you're already at, like, the end of, like, a 2-hour practice. Man, you're cooked. You know what I mean?
But playing 2-on-2-on-2, I don't know if you guys know what's that, but I think that's the worst exercise I ever had in my life.
Break down the 2-on-2-on-2 for listeners so they know what you're talking about.
So there's a 2-on-2. You play pick and roll on top. And there's two guys staying on the side. So whoever play offense become a defense. And the defense pass the ball outside to these two guys and they go to another side.
Oh, yeah, to the other side.
And
it's
back and forth all the time like that.
Yeah.
Not stopping. There's not stopping.
Yo,
in that
that's one. Crazy, yo. I don't know. So, man, you got drafted, right? You got drafted 56 overall 2012. And you came to the States, played in Oklahoma City for a year. What was your mentality during the draft and stash process early in your career?
Well, since I was like young age and I did the European and World Championships and we did good, I was like one of the talented guys in my group. So going to the draft, I think I went too late because I went when I was 22. I should go before, but it was what it was. But being drafted is just like, it was a dream, dream coming true. You got shot, to go in NBA, especially like I've been drafted by Toronto, what is like kind of more European club, more mentality wise and everything. And then, like, I had the opportunity to go there and I didn't took it because I was like, maybe I'm not ready mentally, physically, because through the young age, I was really skinny. And then, like, all the NBA drafts, prospects, scouts, I'm kind of like, I don't have that, what is necessary to play in NBA. So I was like, okay, maybe I'm not born and ready for that. Let me, stay in Europe. But I always dreamed to go there to give it a shot. And that opportunity, came up when I was in OKC. They traded me a year before from Toronto. And, it was a fun year for me. It was a really good experience. And I was really happy to be a part of NBA organization.
What was there a personal, like, mental block for you when you got there? Or was it just the scout saying it? Because If you done survived 2 days in the mountains, doing 4-hour practices each, like, I would imagine mentally you feel like you could survive anything or you could figure anything out. So what was the mental block, I guess, for you as a European when you came over to the States?
I mean, I don't think there was anything special. It was like, I think the physique wise, I wasn't ready for that. I was just not on the level what they expect me to be. And I was trying to gain weight and gain the muscles and everything, but didn't work as fast as they wanted me. So my agency and the people around me were like, maybe, you should try the different path. So I'm like, okay, cool. Mm. That's fine with me.
I feel like for bigs especially like young bigs, I think it's better for them to come over to the States as quick as they can, just especially if they need to mature their body. And like nowadays, I mean, you're talking about like college or, you know, G League or even in the NBA, even if you have to sit because, you know, when you're playing on these pro teams in Europe, if the vets want to lift twice a week, mm-hmm. you're going to lift twice a week. And that's just what it is. Like, whereas these kids in college, like, I mean, you're gonna go to college in 4 years, you're going to look like Jordan Taylor. You know what I'm saying? So I think that, you know, there are some advantages for going to the States in regards to, like, putting on weight and things like that, especially for bigs that, you know, that need it.
No, I definitely agree with you. Just, like, I wasn't, I guess, not being supportive enough from the people who was around me. So I didn't push too much for it. I was like, okay. I mean, if you think I'm not ready and it's not something for me, like, let me stay in my path and see what I can do for in the future. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. All right, man. Well, let's jump inside the L real quick, man. The next segment I want to talk about, it's been a trending topic about is the world champion, the World Cup champion, the world champion, or is the NBA champion a world champion? So we don't want to, I don't want to beat that over the head. It's been talked about, it's been discussed. But what I do want to know is with all this talk of, you know, world basketball progressing, and obviously Serbia seems to overachieve even when they don't have their best players in these international competitions, and Germany wins it. What do you guys think if you took, first of all, take a 2000s all-world team. Who's on your team? You got to give me seven guys. And then take a modern-day all-world team and give me seven guys. And then who wins that? Who wins that series, best of seven? So I'll let Goods, because, Zoo, because this is I didn't give you warning on this, I'm going to let Goods go first because he's heard me ask this question before. So I'll let Goods go first. I'll let you think about it.
I mean, I think a current world team, obviously you're looking at Doncic, Giannis, you're looking at Jokic, Embiid. Who else? Shea. You're looking at Shea. You're definitely looking at Shea. That's what, five? And that's five right there.
You got Bogdanovic. You got.
Yeah, I mean, I think now, I mean, as you're getting into, you know, the last two, I mean, there's so many different ways Pascal. You can go with Giddey. You can go Sabonis, Pascal.
Markkanen.
I
mean, there's technically Wiggins.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different guys you can throw into that extra spot, but. If we go to the 2000 world side, okay, who are we looking at? As you were saying, Nash, Yao Ming, Dirk,
Manu,
Tony Parker, Peja. Manu, Peja, Gasol.
Yeah. All right. So we'll just call it one team that we can, or each person has, or we have a team amongst the three of us for each side. So let's call it Nash, Manu, Peja, Dirk, Yao. TP and Powell. Let's call it that. And on the now we'll say Shea, Luka, Jokic, Giannis, Embiid, Markkanen. Should we say Markkanen?
Yeah, let's say Markkanen.
Who do you want to say? You want another guard? You want Jamal Murray? Who you want?
We can go Murray.
Sabonis, Andrew Wiggins, Gobert.
Let's just say Jamal Murray.
So we'll say Jamal Murray for now.
There you go,
Bear on him. With that team, and honestly, you can make a team of 10 easily for both sides, but we'll just keep it. With those teams, sure. Who you like? You like, because a lot of talk is the world is catching up and the world's making all this progress. I want to know, in your opinion, which side is going to win that series? And I have a reason for asking that I'm going to get into. Zoop, you could go first. You could go first. Who you got?
I'll go with first team with With the
team. Current team? Okay. And you going good? You going with the current team?
Yeah, because I don't think the current team, outside of Giannis, I don't think you have any non-shooters.
Outside of Embiid?
He can stretch it.
But I mean he can step outside. He can step outside, but I'm gonna take the 2000s team simply because I just feel like they all mesh together better. In my opinion, I think they just mesh together better. I think Yao was damn near unstoppable when he was healthy. We're assuming everybody's healthy. I still think Dirk might be the best player out there, the best offensive player out there.
You sure?
You're going to take Jokic as the best offensive player? I know Jokic passes and all that, but Dirk as a scorer, Jokic, don't get it twisted.
Embiid as a scorer.
I might take Yao over Embiid.
In what age?
Their primes. Both are in their primes. I might take Yao. I might take Nash out of any guard just in their prime. I know Luka puts up monster numbers, but Nash is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think with that team, you just have a lot of matchup issues with the previous team. I think you have a lot of matchup issues on the defensive end. And I think that, I think there's just not as many on the current team. I mean, guys, I think players overall are just more skilled now than they were 20 years ago. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, mate, are those guys that much more skilled then? Like, is Luka that much more skilled than Nash? I know he's bigger.
No, I didn't. Got more space, and he's bigger than everybody else.
Yeah, he's bigger. He can post.
Yeah,
he's drawing fouls. He's
more all around, and with Steve Nash, that's.
I mean, but Steve Nash with Luka, he gets whatever he wants too. So it's like shit. I mean, the score going to be 212-208 every game.
Yeah. I mean, it will be in the perfect world. It would be a great game to see. I just think that. If we're talking about the way the game is played these days, as far as how up and down it is, guys getting to the line and guys shooting the three ball, I think this generation is probably a little better at that than previous. But I think there's just too much talent on the floor. It would be a good game regardless. I don't think anybody would blow anybody out because there's just too much talent.
I'm forgetting some people too from the early 2000s. I need some size in there, pause. But it's like. There's definitely some guys missing from the early 2000s team that I forgot about. But I just feel like you have defined roles. Luka, I mean, he can't post up with Jokic and Embiid on the floor. Like, it's only so much space. Like, where them dudes big as hell. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's tough, man. I think what's going to be interesting is seeing the carryover from a lot of these guys playing in the summer, having a lot of usage, like a marketing, Schroeder even, and how that's going to relay into the NBA season. Because I think we saw it with marketing, last year in the EuroBasket tournament, and then thankfully he got traded, usage went up, and he had an amazing year. So I just always think it's going to be it's interesting watching these guys perform in like a FIBA setting. And then seeing them go back to their teams and seeing what translates and what doesn't, or if anything changes in their game at all.
Well, I guess, okay, so I asked that question not to necessarily debate who would win, but more so to ask, there's a lot of talk about the world has caught up or the world, but to me, the world has had this level of talent for a long time now. Yeah. And would you disagree, agree?
I would disagree because right now you can see a lot of more people who are on the level of NBA. Before, there wasn't a lot of European guys who could compete with NBA. They would not be that good enough. like they would not beat USA team anyway. Like it was like only before like this year and maybe last few years, like only Spain who was like competitive with USA.
Greece won in 06, right? Like you had Luis Scola and
but it was like really rare. Like you had a few people before. You had like what? You had a few guys who were like in the top teams who had a role in NBA. Right now you got a bunch of guys from Europe like leading the teams. Mm. You didn't have that
before. I mean, you had Nash and Dirk winning. They won 3 straight MVPs, similar to now.
Yeah, but no, I mean,
you got to get into like the Detlef Schrempf's even of the world. Like, there, I feel like for a long time there's been, like, obviously Rudy Fernandez had his stint. I think for a long time now, who is Kleiza, and you know, you had Kleiza over in Toronto. Like, I think for a long time the world has had a lot of guys. And to be honest, I think some of the shift has to do with the selection process, more so than guys who are actually capable.
Yeah. I think it's the style of play. I mean, if you go back to the 2000s and especially right before that, like taking 5 3-pointers in a game, you better be Ray Allen. You know what I'm saying? Like everything was very much get to the rim range, get to the basket, and I don't think that suited, you know, a lot of these European players' games, you know, back in the day. So even if you had a guy that, like a Radmanovic or a Peja or whoever it is. You know what I mean? They're going to get a limited amount of 3-point attempts because that's just the game plan. Whereas now it's like we're going to take those 3-point attempts over a mid-range, you know, this whole layup and threes movement. So now it fits more European players, so you're seeing more of them come over. Whereas back then, you know, you had the 3-out, 2-in offense and, you know, you needed guys that could put the ball on the floor, get to the basket and make something happen in the mid-range, which that just wasn't, you know, their game back in the day from my perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bargnani too. Forgot, like there was a lot of them though. There was a lot of them, but
there was a lot of people, a lot of Europeans.
So anyway, moving on, you wanna hit paycheck rain check?
Yeah, man. Paycheck rain check. Somebody's paycheck is taking a rain check, and today's feature is Artūrs Zagars from Latvia. He went into the FIBA World Cup unsigned, bet on himself, played amazing, had some amazing games against a lot of NBA talent out there, held his own, and then walked out of the FIBA World Cup with a 3-year deal, signing with Fenner. I'm not sure if that is confirmed, not or yet, but we're assuming that it is. So tying this into last year where, you know, kind of mirrors Dennis Schroeder's situation where he came into Eurobasket unsigned, had an amazing run at Eurobasket, and then signed with the Lakers. So the question for you gentlemen is playing on the national stage more important than your season production, than your in-season production?
You the guest, Zoob, so you can lead off.
Well, from my experience, like playing best, like best of the game in a world or European championship in national team, I think that gets you to the different level. Like these guys, like you said, they bet on themselves. And Schroeder did that. This guy did it with seven. He took a world record with assists, 17 assists per game. That's not easy on any level. I mean, JT know, like, he don't pass the ball a lot, but he know how is that. But yeah, I mean, betting on that on himself, like, I think he did a good job. You know, having him official sign for the team or not, I think he amazed a lot of people in this tournament. And you know, it was a good show from him, especially from his team. Like, they did an amazing job. Like, you don't get that a lot. So, and they had a bunch of good group, a bunch of good guys, and, you know, they made success.
What do you mean by is it more important?
Well, I think it's because if you look at Zagars, right, he averaged 15 points and, like, 4.5 assists last season in Lithuania. he comes into the World Cup on a national stage, puts up the same exact numbers, damn near, and he goes to Fenner. He wasn't getting offers from Fenner in season. So what I'm saying is, as a player, if you have this opportunity to go into a world championship or a European championship stage, I feel like it's almost better, if you're feeling good, to kind of hold out, you know what I'm saying? If you're really trying to, you know, bet big and get a bigger opportunity, you know, because I think he could have always went back to Lithuania putting up those numbers, but not signing, putting up those same numbers on a world championship level, I think you end up with a higher payout.
I think performing on a world level, will always end up in a better deal. Like if you perform same, like you said, same on a world level as on a in season or even EuroLeague level, I think it's probably going to pay out more for the world level for sure. So I don't know about if it's more important, but I think it could be more beneficial. It's also way more risky. Way more risky, because you got six, well, whatever, how many games did they play? Maybe 8-10 games, whatever it is. You got a 10-game season, yeah. So you better go in there guns blazing, like ready to roll. And I think Schrader even was a little different situation than Artur's, just because Schrader was already like a proven commodity, whereas Artur's is like, man. And to be honest, I only got to watch like the short highlights or the condensed clips and all that. And the passing was the least impressive part of what he was doing to me. Like he was getting downhill, getting in the paint, like finishing over guys. Like, and that's not to diminish the passing, but either way, yeah, I think it's a bigger risk. I think it's bigger risk, bigger reward situation.
I think if you're at the B level of Europe in regards to your team, I think it's worth the risk. You know what I'm saying? If you're already at the EuroLeague level or the bigger Euro Cup teams, then yeah, it's a risk. But I think if you're at the level of like a Lithuania or slightly above that, I think it's worth the risk. Because I mean, look at Ponika from Poland last year. He did the same thing. Coming out of that, he signed a EuroLeague deal because he had a great tournament. You know what I'm saying? And Poland didn't do well. It's not like they won, but he played well. And now he's playing EuroLeague again. So, I don't know. I just think that there's a specific situation where it works. But I think if you're B-level and down and you had that opportunity to play.
Do you have any examples of when it backfired?
When it backfired? No, I don't know any off the top of my head. I mean, you guys are usually signed going into these tournaments, but I mean, it always sucks when you got a player that goes out there and gets hurt, you know, seriously, like Neto. He signed the deal, got hurt, and now he's probably, hopefully he plays this season, but maybe he doesn't. You know, I think that's always worst case scenario.
All right, man, that's all we got for you today, Zoo. Appreciate you joining us again. Appreciate y'all coming back for season 2. Make sure you check us out on Spotify, Apple Music, or anywhere you get your podcasts. Also, again, follow us on all social media platforms as YouTube, IG, TikTok, and Twitter with the handle @RolePlayerMedia or on Switch Culture's YouTube page. I'm Jordan Taylor. That's Anthony Goods. Tonislav Zubcic, appreciate you joining us. Good luck this year in Napoli. If y'all get a chance, make sure y'all check them out. Go support them. And that's all we got. We'll catch y'all next time.